This episode comes from an inner child workshop I recently gave. It's a group workshop and it involves some hypnosis. So don't listen to it if you're driving or operating heavy machinery. If you'd like to see the video of this workshop, you can visit my YouTube channel, a link to which can be found in the description. Okay, so welcome to this workshop on inner child healing. Tonight we're going to be covering lots of topics and lots of benefits of inner child healing. We're mainly going to be looking at how it can help us overcome negative self-talk, decrease anxiety, increase self-esteem and confidence. So, the agenda. First of all, we're going to be looking at why you should heal the inner child, then unhelpful beliefs, unhelpful coping strategies, how the inner child affects relationships, learned helplessness, about me and my own experiences, the stages of healing. We're going to be looking at some exercises. I'm going to show you some exercises that can help you to heal your inner child. And we're going to have a short hypnosis session and talk about what you can do next. But why heal the inner child? Until the age of 7 is known as the imprint period, and it's in this age range that our neuroplasticity is at its highest. It's when we're learning the most complex and difficult tasks, when we're learning about ourselves and our environment. And as babies, we have no boundaries. We internalize everything and we're looking to the people around us to form our sense of identity. We're looking to our parents and caregivers to teach us about the world. So if the people looking after us have unresolved trauma and aren't confident, if they have anxiety, we'll pick up on that as a baby. And it will form our beliefs and influence our map of the world. So some unhelpful beliefs that many of us pick up in childhood are money doesn't grow on trees. I'm not good enough. If we grow up in a dysfunctional family, we can develop the belief we're not good enough. Again, a lot of dysfunctional parents will tell their children that they should have been born a boy or a girl, which makes the child insecure. No one loves me. If we grow up with parents who were rushed to get married because of us or felt pushed out as a child, we're going to form the belief that no one loves us, there's something wrong with us. And when we grow up in a very dysfunctional environment, when we're constantly living in fear, we can get brain fog, which affects our performance at school and makes us believe we're thick and stupid. We grow up thinking the world's a dangerous place or that we deserve to be treated badly. Anyone have any unhelpful beliefs that they like to add to that list? I know I had one as a child. My father used to tell me that life wasn't fair, which wasn't a useful belief. So we have what's called a reticular activating system. And in NLP, there's a theory that we can only be aware of 7 plus or minus 2 things at any one time. And if all of the things our senses were picking up was made available to our brain, it would be overloaded because there's about 14,000 different bits of information going on around us at any one time. So we need to sort this information and find what's most relevant to us. To do this, we've got what's called a reticular activating system, and that's a walnut shaped network of neurons located in the brainstem. Its purpose is to help you sort information quickly so you can make decisions quickly. It does this by filtering out anything that isn't relevant to you. Now, your past experiences have programmed your reticular activating system on what to filter and what not to filter. Traumatic events, if we're in a traumatic event, we need to learn from that event fast so that we don't get into it again. So traumatic events program the RAS very quickly, which is why people in the fight or flight response develop tunnel vision. But the RAS can also be programmed by repetitive stimuli over longer periods of time. So all your life experiences have distorted your view of reality. And this can be seen quite clearly at the moment, by the way, different people are reading different things into the current pandemic. Everything you see around you is a projection of your beliefs. Someone who grows up in a wealthy family will not form the same beliefs about money as someone who grows up in a poor family. So rich kids generally grow into rich adults and poor kids generally grow into poor adults. But we can reprogram the reticular activating system. And the good news is that by doing this and by changing your beliefs, you can change what you see around you. Something else, another benefit of inner child healing is it can help us to overcome negative self-talk. And negative self-talk is an inner dialogue that you have with yourself. It's an inner critic, a hijacked superego. And a child who grows up in a dysfunctional family, as I said, when we're babies, we have no boundaries and we're looking to our parents to show us, you know, who we are, to form our identity. So if the parent is abusive, we will internalize that abuse and create an inner critic. And this inner critic can keep us stuck in a negative cycle. It can call us names, it can cause us to feel anxious, tell us that we're useless or worthless. It can cause us to be codependent and a people pleaser. It can cause us to have a lack of boundaries. And it can keep us stuck in abusive relationships, tell us there's something wrong with us. The different kinds of negative self-talk. We can have perfectionism, which if you try to be perfect, you'll never be good enough. All or nothing thinking, so also called black or white thinking. Examples would be thinking, I'll never be good enough, I'll always fail. There's no in between with all or nothing thinking, it's either or. And people who suffer with depression often have all or nothing thinking. And then there's pessimism, always worrying about the worst case scenario, always looking for things that can go wrong. Name calling, calling yourself names, which can also involve projecting negativity onto others. This can involve gossiping about people. We can also project our past experiences onto others, thinking everyone is out to get us. It's low vibration energy, which is a parasite that wants to spread, according to Owen Cook. Relationships. We are most attracted to people that will traumatize us, and these are called attractions of deprivation. And they're caused by traumatic experiences in childhood. We all have them. We feel most drawn to people that embody the worst emotional characteristics of our primary caregivers. So even though we may now be adults, we often have unresolved childhood hurts due to betrayal, manipulation, abuse, and neglect from our caregivers. So unconsciously, we seek to heal these wounds in our intimate relationships, and we seek out people that will irritate these wounds so that we can heal them. So, attachment anxiety. So we have known knowns, that's things we know, that we know. And then we have known unknowns, which are things that we know we don't know. We have unknown knowns. Unknown knowns are things that we don't know we know. And then we have unknown unknowns. These are things that we don't know, and we don't know that we don't know them. So unknown knowns create cognitive dissonance. So if one of our primary caregivers is abusive, we need to know that so we can stay safe. But as a child, we don't want to think badly of our parents because we're relying on them for food and clothing. So this knowledge becomes an unknown known. And we can come up with all kinds of toxic coping strategies to overcome it. And we can also project it onto our other relationships. And this creates attachment anxiety. And we can take that into, other relationships. For example, a man who grows up with a mother who abandons him can grow up thinking that all women are going to abandon him, and he'll push them away and be abusive to them to recreate, you know, that experience that he had with his mother. So learned helplessness. In countries like India and Sri Lanka, they still use elephants to pull heavy loads. And then at the end of the day, they secure them for the night with flimsy chains, secured to stakes in the ground. And the elephant could easily pull that stake out of the ground and rampage through the forest. But they don't do this because they've learned helplessness. And this is caused when they're a baby, they're secured down. And they're too small to snap that chain or pull that rope out of the ground. So they eventually stop trying. And so even now they're grown up and big and strong, they still believe they can't do it. And so they don't bother. And there's a baby elephant. There's a big elephant. And it's the same for humans. Learned helplessness is a state that occurs after a person has experienced a stressful situation repeatedly. They come to believe that they're unable to control or change the situation, so they stop trying, even when opportunities for change become available. They can not see that. They just don't see them. They're just not aware of them. So learned helplessness doesn't necessarily come from rejection or obvious abuse. It can also be caused by mollycoddling or being told to be careful all the time. Does anyone have any experiences with learned helplessness? Let me know in the chat. Okay, so about me. So Yep. So I used to suffer a lot with dissociation and flashbacks. I was also very emotionally dysregulated, anxious. I used narcissistic coping tendencies to try and feel calmer. I had attachment issues. I couldn't form healthy relationships. I couldn't keep a job. I had all kinds of problems. And I had CPTSD. It's estimated that around 80% of people suffer with CPTSD. CPTSD stands for Complex Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder, and it's suffered by prisoners of war and children who grow up in dysfunctional families. It's caused when you are repeatedly suffering trauma, but there's just no escape. You're reliant on your parents, as I said, for food and clothing, so there's no way out. And that causes complex PTSD. So around 80% of people have complex PTSD. As I said, it is caused by, everyone's doing the best that they can with what they have, but most parents have some kind of trauma that they pass on to their children. It's called reenactment. And generational, it's just passed from generation to generation. So in 2015, I decided that things needed to change. So I began studying hypnosis, cognitive behavioral therapy, mindfulness, and EFT. I spent thousands on counseling, coaching, and training, and I've attended training courses and seminars all over the UK and in Ireland. It all helped me to become more confident and less anxious. But it wasn't until I started doing the inner child work that things really began to change for me. Does anyone have any experience with inner child work? Let me know in the chat box. Okay, so all abuse is the transfer of shame. As I said, our parents are doing the best they can with what they have, but they've likely. Excellent. But they've likely got some kind of trauma which they will pass on to their children. What we don't heal, we either reenact by finding other people to abuse us the same way, or we project onto others by becoming the abuser. And John Bradshaw says that shame is a healthy human emotion that can be transformed into a state of being. And shame can. Shame can take over our whole identity. So we can, as I said, we can internalize this shame and it can show up in all areas of our lives. So growing up in dysfunctional families, we internalize the abuse and think it means there's something wrong with us, which can lead to all kinds of issues. It can lead to addiction, obsessive compulsive disorder, anxiety, attachment issues, relationship problems. Growing up in an environment where there's a lot of arguing can cause us to feel pushed out and unwanted. So the stages of healing. So as we start healing the inner child, we're going to experience different stages. First of all, we may become angry and wonder, you know, why did they do this to me? And then we can start reliving old traumas and memories, which can cause anxiety. And then finally, we're going to start to experience grief as we break away from the internalized parent, the inner critic, and realize that we're not who we thought we were. We start losing our old identity and beliefs. So it's it can be a painful journey, but by healing the inner child, we're going to reach a state of calm and inner peace. And we're no longer going to look to other people to make us happy. We'll be able to form relationships based on acceptance and love. We'll be able to experience unconditional love. And this will improve all of our relationships. So healing techniques. Has anyone heard of box breathing before? Let me know in the chat box. Yep, excellent. Okay, so excellent. The box breathing in yoga. Cool. So box breathing involves breathing in for a set number. It could be 5 or 4. Holding the breath for the count of 5. Breathing out for the count of 5, and then holding the space between breaths for the count of 5. So you'd all like to try that now, just breathing in for the count of 5, holding the breath for 5, breathing out for 5, and then holding the space between breaths. When you do that, you should notice yourself starting to feel more relaxed. Crystal healing, yep. So try that for a couple of breaths and notice. Another one we can do is called 7-11 breathing. So that involves elongating the out breath by making the out breath longer than the in breath. Yep. By making the out breath longer than the in breath, we are going to trigger the relaxation response. If you were in immediate danger or state of threat, you wouldn't be breathing out for longer than you're breathing in. So by elongating the out breath, we can tell our mind it's safe. So if you'd like to try that now, just breathe in for the count of 7. And then breathe out for 11. Try a couple of breaths like that. Breathing in for 7, breathing out for 11. Let me know in the chat box if you notice yourself feeling any more relaxed. Excellent. Okay. Yes. Cool. Who's heard of EFT? Had a stressful day at work. Yep. Tried EFT today? Yep. Did you find it work, Jazz? Excellent. All right, so I'll show you a quick bit of EFT. So what we need to do first is called the setup. So what we do, we would take the side of the hand and we would tap there. We can use two fingers to tap there, or we can tap both hands together like so. And as we do that, we would say, even though I have anxiety, I truly, deeply, and completely accept myself. Or whatever we may be experiencing. We can use it on all kinds of emotions. We can use it on anger. Use it on grief. As Jazz said, we can use it for pains, can use it on back pain. The theory is, it comes from Chinese medicine, and the theory is that if we have blocked energy anywhere on the body, we can tap through these meridian points and block it. So did it help you lose weight, D? Okay, and so then we'd go to the top of the head and we tap at the top of the head there. We could say this anxiety. And then the eye between the eyebrow and the nose, we tap there, this anxiety. And then the side of the eye, this anxiety. Under the eye, this anxiety. And then between the nose and the top lip, just there, this anxiety. And then between the bottom lip and the chin, it's anxiety. And the inventor of EFT, Gary Craig, he wrote a book. And in the book, he has, and then we tap the collarbone, it's anxiety. And then under the arm, it's anxiety. In the book, he has, we list all the things that are bothering us, and then we give them what's called a SUD score on a scale of 1 to 10. How much is it bothering us? So how anxious are we, or how unhappy are we, how angry are we? And then we tap through all the points that I just showed you, and bring that SUD score down. SUD stands for subjective unit of distress. So, okay, and then mindfulness. Now, mindfulness is a very useful thing to use, especially if we suffer with negative self-talk. By practicing mindfulness meditation, we can start to distance ourselves from our thoughts and start to silence the inner critic. So who would like to try some mindfulness meditation? Let me know in the chat box. Yep. Okay, excellent. Okay, so, excellent. Okay, so what you'd want to do is sit up straight. Sit up with your back straight. So the purpose of meditation isn't to become relaxed, although that may be a side effect of meditation. The purpose of meditation is to become aware and to learn to accept things without judging. So you'd sit with your back straight and you'd close your eyes, take a deep breath in, breathe out, and then as you're breathing in, focus on the tip of your nose and notice the air flowing in through the tip of your nose. Maybe you can notice it hitting the back of your throat and going down into your stomach. Breathing all the way down into the stomach. And as you breathe in, you'd notice the stomach rising. And you'd label it as rising, and then breathe out, falling. And if any thoughts come into your mind, you just label them as thinking. You don't want to judge them as good or bad. I'll let you just do that for a few breaths now, just breathing in and breathing out. Okay. So when you're ready, you can open your eyes and just let me know how you found that in the chat box. Okay, so other things we can do to help with inner child healing, things you can take away and do. You can write a letter to your parents and tell them everything you feel you missed out on as a child. It's not to give to them, it's just for you. Just for your own benefit, and you can burn it afterwards if you want. Another thing you can do is to write a letter to your younger self. So you'd say, dear little Bob, I love you and accept you, and I'll always be here for you. Something along those lines. Obviously, you want to put it in your own words, and then you can write a letter from your younger self to your adult self. So you'd write, dear, something along the lines of, dear Big Bob, I hope you're well. And, you know, just like how you're finding being a child. If you can get a picture of yourself before you were 7, put it somewhere where you'll see it regularly, like in your wallet or purse or on the refrigerator. And then we come to hypnosis. So who wants to try some hypnosis? Let me know in the chat box. Yep, excellent. Okay. Okay, cool. So this hypnosis is going to involve a little bit of regression, not to anything traumatic or bad, but if you do have any kind of bad memories, anything in childhood that you don't remember, you may not want to do it. So hypnosis is a deeply relaxing state that we all experience several times during the course of a day. You've ever driven somewhere, gone to your destination and not remembered the journey? That's hypnosis. You've ever been reading a book and lost track of time? That would be a state of hypnosis. Watching telly, we watch telly and zone out and the program we're watching finishes and it's time for bed. That's a state of hypnosis. So hypnosis is a focused state of attention. It's not necessarily relaxing if you're playing a sport and you cut yourself or damage some skin. You don't realize because you're so engaged in what you're doing. That would also be a state of, it'd be a state of trance. So hypnosis, as I say, is a state of trance, which is a focused state of attention. And it's thought that when we use hypnosis, we're accessing the theta brainwave state. And theta is part of the REM sleep cycle. It's a hyper-learning state that we all experience several times during the course of the day. So we've got five different brainwave states. We've got beta and gamma. Yep, you've done trance work. Excellent. We've got beta, gamma. They're waking brainwave states. And then we've got alpha, which is the brainwave state we start to enter as we begin to relax. And then theta, which is part of the REM sleep cycle. And some of the features of theta are that we can visualize things more clearly. And it's thought that when we dream, we are we're processing what things that have occurred during the day. So it's thought that if we didn't dream, we'd go mad. So it's very important part of the sleep cycle. And then after theta comes delta, which is the deep sleep part of the sleep cycle. It's when your body's releasing hormones and repairing itself. And it's thought that until the age of seven, children are in that theta brainwave state. So it's thought to be a hyper-learning thing. If you suffer with epilepsy, it's not advisable to experience hypnosis. So if you're ready, make yourself comfortable. You can sit back and relax. You want to allow your eyes to close. Just begin focusing on your breath. Notice the in-breath, out-breath once again. Just listening to the sound of my voice, any other sound you hear. Just allow you to relax and drift deeper, becoming more and more relaxed, more and more at ease. Allow yourself to experience the comfort. Going inside your mind. Experience the peaceful tranquility. and allow yourself to really experience now. As you continue breathing, maybe you can become aware of your pulse. Notice that pulse is swelling now. To become more relaxed, more at ease, allowing yourself to let go. And as a child, you learn how to let go just the right amount, just the right time. You learn to crawl, push yourself up furniture. You learn to let go when you are ready to walk, to take those first steps. If you've ever observed a child learning to walk, you know that they instinctively put their hands out in front of them, above their head, so that they can catch themselves if they fall. And there's that distinct instinctive part of all of us that knows how to keep us safe. Always looking to protect us in some way. I'd like you to just suppose that you're unconscious mind can do almost anything you can imagine. Just suppose that you're unconscious. It's beginning to take control. Now you're going into trance. As that trance begins to deepen more and more, you can become aware of various phenomena. You can notice your eye moving about beneath your eyelids. You can notice tiny muscles and arms and legs become more and more relaxed. And as those muscles relax more, they may begin to twitch a little. And I can let you know unconscious is taking control. And in the unconscious part of your mind, time and space, meaning. It was about a moment ago that you were just a child. I wonder if you can remember street where you used to live. Maybe the house, place where you lived as a child. I wonder if you can imagine yourself walking down this and approaching that place where you used to be. And seeing a small child outside that, maybe playing the sand pit with a doll. Fluffy animal. Just watch that child from distance. What colour's their hair? What colour are their eyes? As you approach that child, you smile. Say hello to them. You can tell them that you're from their future. Tell them that you're the one person they will never lose. Maybe you can ask them if they like to go with you. If they would, you can take them by the hand. Start walking away from that house, from that place where you used to live. Walking back down the street. Turning round, you can see parents at the door. You can smile and wave. They can smile and wave back to you. You can keep walking with inner child. You can come to maybe a playground or a place where you used to like to play, to hang out with your friends. Maybe you can see some of your favourite friends there. And you can bend down, tell your inner child, leave them here to play with friends. You'll come back to visit them regularly. Maybe you can imagine the younger version of you shrinking down to fit in your palm, scooping them up, placing them in your heart, feel yourself connecting with your inner child, that younger version of you. Get a sense of what they need. Walking away from a place, maybe you can walk past first school. Take some time to explore. Explore that place. Explore any positive, happy memory. As you begin to come back to the present, bringing with you in the child, carrying them in your heart. In a moment, I will count from 5 down to 1. When I reach the number 1, you can open your eyes. Come back, noticing that things have changed somehow. Maybe feeling more connected, more at home in this world of ours. I start counting now. 5, 4. Maybe you can get a sense of the energy returning to your body. 3. Feel that energy running up your legs. 2. Running down your arms and into your hands. Maybe you'd like to wiggle those fingers a little. 1. You can open your eyes and come back to the present, noticing how good you feel. If you like that, let me know in the chat box. Thank you. Excellent. Thank you. Okay. Okay, so going back to the presentation. Thank you. I just made it up. Okay, so what next? I have a inner child program, which is set out as so. It's an 8-week program. We look at anxiety, how the inner child influences our lives. We look at goals and setting goals, doing inner child work. Mindfulness and emotional regulation. We basically go deeper on the things I've covered tonight and in much more detail. We do a lot of exercises, such as letter writing, a lot of different things. And as a group, we can, you know, all be held accountable for reaching our goals.